That was a good pop there.
Well, messy.
Woo! We are back with another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. He's Scott Manzi. I'm Alex Turco. And after a long week away from you, we've returned. So give me a cheers for that. And I thank Keith and Mike Yachty for filling in last week. I actually ran into the whole...
I heard.
A little shout out there to the Dimes on Duval. And man, are they dimely. Those guys are 10s out of 10s, and I appreciate them filling in for me. But it's good to be back with you. It was a long week without you. It was sad. The NBA draft was upon us. And really, I was stuck in a hotel room all by myself. So it's kind of a bummer. I missed you.
Yeah, missed you, man.
That's all I wanted to say. I missed you.
It's never quite the same. I always appreciate all of our friends of the program who I can call up on short notice and have fill in for you, whether that be Bods or Colin or Keith and Mike. We've had several over the course of the last several months, but it's not quite the same. You know, there's something we got going on here, and it's good to be back. And boy, oh boy, do we pick as good a week as possible to be back, because we've got... It's just big. It's big for us. It's big for the brand of this podcast. And you know, as Florida State guys.
I thought you were going to say Thanksgiving.
No, well, that.
I'm all in.
Yeah, we're already.
For us. Yeah, I'm fired up.
But as Florida State guys, we've never had more to talk about when this team hasn't played a game than we do this week. And less of it has to do with the Noles and more of it has to do with the opponent. But let's go ahead and quickly set the scene for those that somehow may have missed it. I don't know how you listen to our podcast and not know what happened. Early on Saturday morning, it comes out that Florida State and Clemson are not playing as originally scheduled. It's supposed to be a noon kickoff at about 8 o'clock in the morning is when it came down that due to a player having tested positive that was part of the travel party for Clemson, the medical staffs got together. Florida State's medical staff was not comfortable in greenlighting the game. They got together, agreed, we're not going to play today because both parties have to agree to play. Yep. And from there, the fireworks really started. That was actually the least exciting part of everything that went down on Saturday, because then it turned into a big finger-pointing match and a he said, and boy, oh boy, it was Real Housewives of Tallahassee and Clemson on Saturday, and it's only continued as we're recording this on a Monday. We've had a Sunday night. There was more from Dabo. Monday, Mike Norvell's press conference. Boy, it has been a dramatic 72 hours here for these two programs.
For two programs that relatively respect each other, this has all the shapings of the final push to make this an actual rivalry.
Yeah.
Like, it's on now. It's like forever Clemson has been our little brother. And then now they can't wait to step on our neck and show us that they're the king of the ACC. And then now that there's a behind the scenes, F you, no, you did this, no, you did that, you're scared to play us. It's on now. I really think this is the making of a huge rivalry, a lot like LSU-Florida has always been. Yeah, they don't like each other. Yeah, they play hard. But then that one hurricane rescheduling type thing.
It's been nasty ever since.
They hate each other now, although they're not considered arch rivals. Clemson will never be our arch rival. There is real bad blood now between the programs. And Mike Norvell today stood up for Florida State and defended him and said, you know what? I'll contribute for them to come back and play us. It was a matter of keeping Florida State safe. I don't care what another coach says. He might think he's a doctor. Well, he didn't say he, but he pretty much said some coaches think they're doctors. Well,
yeah,
guess
without
what?
Without naming names, he named names.
Yeah, he was not pointing fingers. He was just pointing a huge elbow straight in the face of Dabo. But Dabo's just coming off as an arrogant little prick. Because when I first saw Saturday morning the game got canceled, I was like, oh, hell yeah, that's a win, baby. We don't have to get kicked on national TV against Trevor Lawrence's comeback game. I mean, it would have been very lopsided. But now that there is a Twitter element to it and a coach's element to it, if they play in December, it's gonna be heated.
Can I have the floor for a moment here?
Take it.
So you and I saw each other on early on Saturday, and I told you, man, I can't wait till we record, because I've really got, I want to say some thoughts about how I feel Dabo's being ridiculous.
Quote, let me go off on Dabo.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
I didn't ask a question, so by, me and the listeners are excited to see where heated Scott goes.
By Sunday afternoon, I had changed my tune. I was like, you know what? there was a lot of miscommunication here. This ended up being kind of, overblown a little bit, blah, blah, blah. Well, all of a sudden, I was just going to focus on Florida State and what the positives to the way I thought that Mike Norvell and their team handled this. Well, then Dabo comes out Sunday evening and basically calls out Florida State for ducking the game.
He doubled down.
Doubled down on
it. Big time.
And that's why I said, oh, no, okay, we're right back. We're back. And I told you, I think, a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, so ago now, we were sitting here watching college football one Saturday, and I was like, man, I don't like Dabo. And you're like, really, you don't like Dabo? I was like, no, man. People wouldn't want to call him fake. He's not fake. That's not the right term. And I had a hard time coming to grips with why I didn't like him. And then it really dawned on me this weekend. Dabo is supremely privileged in the fact that he exists in a world that no one else does. He is so in his own Dabo world to where he has no concept of what is going on in real life. And he operates like everyone else is in Dabo world. But like the majority of other people...
Are you referencing the Osama bin Laden thing from a while ago too, from last year?
Well, I've got a list of things. We can throw that on there. Okay. I mean, I was just going to go from this year alone. I mean, Dabo, I think the best way to describe Dabo would be tone deaf all the time. I mean, go back to right after Memorial Day, early June, obviously with the tensions with the racial stuff after George Floyd and everything. Black Lives Matter is blown up to a level it's never been. Everyone's aware of it. And Dabo's photographed wearing a Football Matters shirt. Should we crucify the guy for that? No, I'm not trying to do that. All I'm saying is tone deaf. Yeah. Undeniably tone deaf. Same period of time. We're in a pandemic. The country has shut down. People are losing their jobs and money left and right. And Dabo is using the private Clemson jet to fly his family around to go on vacations because they're like, well, you know, we can't go anywhere normal right now because everything's closed down. So we're just going to go, you know, jet set off to these private locations because we've got to be able to vacation, right? Again, tone deaf. Like, there are a lot of people that weren't able to vacation this year, Dabo, but your inconvenience because you'd use the private jet? I'm sorry. This is just another scenario of Dabo being tone deaf. I mean, I understand the aspect of him being frustrated. The last time his team took the field was against Notre Dame, and they lost that game 2 weeks ago. They had a bye week last week. I know he wanted to get back out there and wash that taste out of his mouth with his team, and they would have in emphatic fashion, regardless of whether or not that game was played. It was a name-your-score type affair for Clemson. But for Dabo to come out when the whole reason the game didn't happen was because he and his staff practiced the guy that had showed symptoms, because he and his staff traveled that same guy despite the fact that I know he tested negative, but they traveled him in the party instead of saying, listen, like, hey, man, sorry, backup O-lineman, but you're just going to have to miss this week for the good of the rest of the team. He and his staff wanted to play this game adhering to the bare minimum ACC protocols, which is just basically like, hey, guys, if you want to just get together and agree to play no matter what the deal is, then feel free. And Florida State said no because they were uncomfortable. Then, yeah, I mean, I know Dabo's been team herd immunity, but my God, read the room. Like, there are numbers off the charts right now in COVID again, and he's sitting there having traveled a dude that had tested positive.
A backup O-lineman, nonetheless.
And doesn't understand what the issue is there.
Right.
I just don't understand how he lives in this fantasy
Dabo
world.
And how does he still
world?
Not have grasped it?
No.
So if you switch gears to the Florida State side, this guy on Clemson's roster may or may not have contacted other players on the Clemson team. Of course he has. He traveled.
Especially as an O-lineman, yes.
Traveled, O-line, meeting rooms, you name it. Regardless, if Florida State, they're on the border already of not being able to field a team, which is ridiculous, but you had the number the other day.
70
we
healthy scholarship guys right now.
You need 70 healthy?
Well, they have 70 healthy. You need 55 healthy
55.
Players, period, scholarship and walk-ons.
So we're talking 20 away from not being able to play a game strictly because you don't have enough guys that are healthy. In certain position groups, mind you, that number changes. It doesn't have to just
be... Well, and for O-line, as we have seen, if it's one, it usually wipes out half the group.
Yep.
And there you go. There's 7 to 8 guys already there that are out at that point.
So if Florida State's in danger of this affecting the rest of their season, then why are we having a problem not understanding that Florida State can't risk to lose guys due to COVID because they already have so many that have opted out, that have transferred, and then on top of that are just injured like normal football years?
And why would you question – so Florida State has not had a single positive test since Mike Norvell missed the Miami game in late September. What they've been doing has worked. Anyone that shows any signs immediately gets isolated. Mike Norvell came out and said that in his hit on game day on Saturday morning. He was like, listen, this is what we do. We take every single potential case seriously because we know how fragile this is. And every week for the last 3 weeks, we've seen a greater number of games canceled or postponed due to contact tracing, due to positive COVID tests. Like, Florida State's just not trying to be one of those teams. And who can blame them? Nick Saban, I think, has had – this is the greatest comparison I've seen, the people that have put Dabo versus Saban here, because those are the ones that are always compared together, right?
Right.
They're the two kings of the sport right now. Nick Saban, 2 weeks ago when they were supposed to play LSU and the game got banged, comes out and says, listen, we wanted to play the game. We were excited to play the game. But we understand that this is not only something that is happening this year, it's to be expected to happen this year. It's just the way this season is going to go. I mean, what a complete opposite reaction than Dabo blaming opponents for like ducking games because his player is the guy that has it, and it just blows me away.
So at the beginning of your rant, you said we were on this couch watching football a while ago, and you had brought up that you don't like Dabo. I was surprised. I no longer like Dabo, just for the record.
Good. I want it on the record.
He's not like a Nick Saban where you just hate him because he's good. He has a lot of things where you're like, this guy is a prick.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and
comes off as a whiny little arrogant guy lately.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into the whole like I don't want to turn this into a religion thing too, but I feel like there's always that, like, you know, the guy that sits there and just talks about God all the time is always one that you sit there and go, this can't be a mask for all the other stuff. Like, you have to be, you can't just be like, because you're thanking God for whatever, not a good human being. Like, it doesn't work that way. And I think he's officially earning some...
Bible thumper.
Yeah, he is that. But I think everybody, most people in the sport were like, probably anti-Urban Meyer till he retired. A lot of people anti-Nick Saban. But I think you have to have a begrudging respect at the very least for Nick Saban.
I love me some Nick Saban, man.
I mean, I don't root
he's
for Alabama.
He's just a no-bullshit guy. I don't root for Bama. But I
respect the heck out of him. You know, Clemson, I don't have any problem with any of their players, really. It's just I won't be able to pull for them anymore because I don't like the guy that's at the top of this thing because I don't like what he stands for. And again, like you said with Mike Norvell, this is the way this happened this weekend, this goes back to August, man. This goes back to, whether you like it or not, the Warren Thompson, DJ Matthews moment where they came out and said publicly that they didn't think that Florida State was being forthcoming and honest enough about their handlings with the COVID protocols. And that forced Florida State, even though the way that they went about it was not right and they got caught out by their teammates for it and everything like that, it did force Florida State to look in the mirror a little bit.
Yep.
And Mike Norvell is trying to make sure he wins a locker room and sets a tone for how he's handling this thing going the rest of the way and wins over this program. And I think he just earned some major points with how he handled things this Saturday. And I know it wasn't even 100% him. It was mostly the medical staff. But he could have raised a stink.
Yep.
And he didn't.
And he doubled down again. We talk about Dabo doubling down. Norvell doubled down and backing up Florida State like mm-hmm. I led this off with. And I think that's really going to help the players say, you know, Coach has our back. Coach cares about our brand. And hopefully the young guys in that locker room take note of that because the old guys, who cares? They're already washed and they're not a part of the solution.
It's about the guys that are going to be around. Yeah.
Yep.
Be around in the future. I don't know if you saw this tonight, but it came out actually this evening that that John Thrasher, the president at Florida State, and then Clemson's president, whose name I don't know off the top of my head, that they called each other on Saturday and discussed it, and they were both in complete agreement that the right thing was done. So literally the only person who didn't agree with how things went down on Saturday,
but that matters, not the Clemson fans,
but it's Dabo.
Dabo did it to up the brand.
Yeah.
You know, up the Clemson brand. We want to play anyone. We'll beat anyone's ass. They didn't want to play us. They were scared of us. That's what he wanted to do. And he achieved it.
Well, and this goes back to, I think a lot of us have kind of chuckled, LOL, hot, hot, at Dabo and kind of the joke about how he's the new greatest at manufacturing adversity. Saban was always great, the rat poison, stuff like that. But now Dabo's officially the king of the manufactured adversity, and it works. I mean, it keeps his team motivated. They certainly don't get complacent. I don't doubt the technique, but like we've hit a new level. If this was like just a move to manufacture more adversity and to prove that everybody was out to get Clemson or something like that, at some point you have to draw the line at what is absurd and what is maybe lighthearted and can be laughed off. And maybe like earlier this year when he went on game day and said that nobody respects this kind of thing, like that's the stuff you can laugh off. Like this, I mean, this is crazy because of the fact that you have to know the world that we're living in these days. And I don't think Dabo understands. I don't think he understands.
Well, he doesn't care to learn. He's a very closed-minded guy.
You nailed it right there. Like whatever doesn't directly impact Dabo, he doesn't care about.
Well, let's get off the Noles, man. I'm a little depressed.
I know. I mean,
and we didn't lose this week.
No, we didn't even lose. Yeah. We didn't lose. But
hey, okay. Well, how about this? This week, did you see that Florida State has an 8 o'clock kick again with Virginia on the ACC network?
Well, I'll be able to see it. Have to work on Saturday in the afternoon.
Oh, so it worked
out.
But
it works out well. So, you know, if you want to come over and watch.
I'm sick of them making an 8 o'clock kick.
I joked with you earlier this year. All those years that I worked football games at JU, and we always kicked early afternoon, and the Noles have been bad for the last couple of years, so they always had the noon kick, and I never got to see Florida State play half the time. Last year, I watched three-quarters of our game on the rewinds on ACC Digital Network on YouTube afterwards, so I'd be able to talk with you on the show about it.
Right, before the show, you'd say, let me watch this. You'd pull it up on YouTube and watch the condensed version.
And this year, I've had nothing to do most Saturdays, and I've got to sit around all day and wait to watch this pitiful Florida State group when it'd be nice to just
gotta beat the Hoos this weekend.
I think we got a shot.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, we could beat them. We could beat Duke, sure. Are we going to? No, we're gonna go 1-1. We'll beat Duke.
Okay, yeah. Jordan Travis will be back. That's good. Especially with Chubba Purdy out. I mean, I don't want this to be the Tate Rodemaker only show.
No.
That's scary. No. And whoever the heck the backup might be at this point with Blackman out and gone.
Yeah.
I mean, do they move Wyatt Rector back as the emergency? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's probably a walk-on somewhere down the line whose name I don't know, but hopefully I don't need to learn his name at any point in time going forward. But rivalry weekend coming up this weekend, an abridged version of it with it being Thanksgiving weekend. Not a lot of those rivalries holding the same punch as they normally do. So I think we're going to hold off on too much in-depth college football discussion this week till next week when we have a college football playoff rankings to talk about, because that, depending on when you guys listen to this, they are dropping Tuesday night. Of course, this comes out Tuesday late morning, this pod does, but we will, you'll probably know who there's a chance you'll know who the top four in the college football playoff is in the very first rankings to come out this year by the time you hear this. And of course, we'll talk about it on next week's show as we get a little bit closer to the end of the season. And, of course, there's some moving pieces around there, too. But we've got plenty more to talk about. We've got NFL stuff to get into. We've got college basketball stuff to get into because, believe it or not, that season is...
We're a basketball school, baby!
...is tipping off this week. At least we believe it's tipping off this week. At this point, I'm not believing anything until I see it. So Wednesday at noon is when everything's supposed to get underway. And
I'm really excited to watch the Noles on the hardwood this year.
Yeah.
Not just the Noles, college basketball in general. College football this year has been so almost stressful, even as a fan. Just like, are they going to play? And it's just a lot to absorb, a lot to think about. Is that going to carry over to basketball? Of course, but they're smaller rosters. Hopefully you can contain it a little bit better.
But at the same time, where, you know, one guy tests positive and
everyone's
contact
out.
Tracing and all 12 dudes are out or whatever. So
I know. And there's more travel. You're traveling two times a week sometimes.
Right.
But I am excited. Just a breath of fresh air. Change it up now that the Mike Norvell era has been a little, you know, has left a little to be desired.
You want to get into basketball now then?
Yeah. Let's jump right to it.
All right.
First of all, was that Cooper Kupp?
That was, yeah.
Yeah, white
nice
boy.
Run and catch. Yeah, yeah. No, he's the best receiver on their team.
Yeah, but for sure.
There was a reason why they weren't very good when he got hurt that year. But college basketball, as I said, scheduled to tip off Wednesday, November 25th, starting at noon. And if you're a college basketball fan, well, guess what? I mean, this is Thanksgiving week, and it's not traditional, but there will be games to watch pretty much all day. I mean, my Xavier Musketeers tip off at noon on FS1 on Wednesday, and you bet your butt I'll be watching that. And I'm fired up to watch basketball throughout the course of the days because it's been a while since we've had some day sports program. I guess we had the Masters 2 weeks ago, but we kind of got spoiled a little bit there for a while with kind of random sporting events in the
NBA
course of the day.
And
yeah,
MLB
and MLS and
NHL was ending.
There was just a lot of stuff going on, and we haven't had that in a while. So it'll be nice to kind of get back into that, especially with the holidays ringing up this week with Thanksgiving. Let's start first with the Florida State Seminoles, and I know you just brought it up. Basketball school, baby. The Noles. Last year really was kind of the solidification of what Leonard Hamilton has been building, it feels like. There had been moments, right? There was a couple of tournament berths in the early part of the last decade. There was, of course, the ACC Tournament Championship in 2012. There was a Sweet 16 in 2011. But really what we've seen in the last couple of years has really been sort of the culmination of this new wave of Leonard Hamilton. And that team was the favorite to win the ACC tournament last year. Pretty incredible group. Lose a couple of key players in Devin Vassell and Patrick Williams. But these Noles are still pretty loaded this year, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And my favorite part about Florida State's basketball is the new blood saying that they say. Instead of blue bloods, we're new bloods.
That's
something that CY, Coach CY, and Stan Jones and Leonard Hamilton have been preaching, tweeting, recruiting by. You hear recruits reiterating it. Guys love that everyone doubts them. And again, I said it in my little, you know how you tell me to do a little
the little hitters on the weekend?
Yeah, a little hit on the weekend, videotape myself.
Yep.
And I said, hey, guess what? Florida State ranked 21, big shock. They doubted us again. Because we lost two top 11 picks, you would say off the cusp, if you're an uneducated basketball fan, yeah, they must not be very good. Well, guess what? We've lost Dwayne Bacon, Jonathan Isaac, Malik Beasley. We've lost player after player after player. First rounders, mind you, Jonathan Isaac, lottery pick. We've lost
Cabangeli
before. Yeah, Cabangeli, first round pick. Terrence Mann,
yep.
Second round pick. These are guys that are impactful players that we've lost. But the way Hamilton runs his program, as you know, and most of our listeners as Florida State fans know, it's a deep rotation. So if you lose a guy or, you know, a guy or two, it doesn't necessarily impact you like it would another school because you've already been running a 9-man rotation at times.
Which is a little unconventional, I guess I should say. A lot of teams sit there and they try and find their best seven, right? But for Florida State, the way that they've done it, where they almost run, you know, hockey lines here, it's worked. They've always been deep. He's always played a lot of guys.
Yep.
And he's found a way to keep everybody happy with it.
Wave after wave of long,
of athletes,
athletic guys that can run, jump, and defend. And that's always been his thing. Hamilton finally implemented a little offense in the Florida State system.
Yep.
And look what it's done. We're now elite. We are an elite basketball school. Let that seep in. Players to watch, though, everyone knows that we lost Patrick Williams, who's a six man.
But
Devin Vassell, who went quiet at times last year.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where you said, where's Devin Vassell? And then when you needed him, he popped up. Senior MJ Walker, he's back. Am I excited about him? He's
steady.
He's steady, Eddie. He's been playing well. There's times where he gets really hot. I'm really, really, really excited about Shadar Calhoun. And I know you probably thought I was going to say Scotty Barnes. And I will talk about Scotty Barnes, but Calhoun's a guy that was a four-star recruit who just lights it up. He averaged, and I followed him on Twitter this year because I was like, man, this guy's highlights are unreal. He goes to the rack well. He's nifty with the ball. But the way he shoots, he can fill it up. Is he going to have an opportunity to drop 20 points a game? Probably not because of that rotation. But when he's in, if he's efficient, having a knockout shooter is going to be huge for Florida State. Between MJ Walker and Calhoun, if those two guys can shoot well, we're going to be in good hands. But again, Scotty Barnes, another guy, fourth overall recruit, highest recruit in school history, 6'9 point guard, plays pretty much 1 through 4. He can play power forward if you need him to. He's a guy that goes to the rack really well, as you can imagine, and sounds like he's doing really well in camp. I mean, the Twitter rumblings are high on him. I'm excited for Florida State this year for a bunch of guys that I think are potential, and I'm ready to see them make the next step.
Do you think that they should be the favorites in the ACC?
I'm okay with where they're at. They're third right now.
Yeah, Virginia is widely considered to be the favorite in the league. They were young last year, putting it together with a more experienced group this year. Tony Bennett, obviously.
And they've been recruiting a little bit better
lately.
Yeah,
and I mean, they're still defending national champs as of this point in time.
Which is bullshit. I forgot about that. When you said that, I was like, no way.
Technically, yes, they are.
That was forever ago.
I know. Well, yeah, almost 2 years ago now.
Banners fly forever.
Yes, they do. And who would you think would be... I mean, do you think Duke is, or North Carolina is?
I'd say Duke. Yeah. North Carolina is a joke to me. They did have a hell of a recruiting class because they had so many scholarships available. 3 5-stars, 3 4-stars. That's a big class for basketball. And you know North Carolina, all they do is roll out talent. But guess what? Roy Williams last year was saying, man, if we just had more talent here.
Yeah. We'll get more into them in a moment.
Okay. But yeah, I think we should be three. I think it should be Virginia, Duke, and Florida State, and I definitely think we can win it.
Okay.
Without question.
Louisville up there, or...
They just lost Nwora.
Nwora is gone. He was their leading scorer last year.
So I'd be uneducated if I said...
I don't even know if Louisville really knows what they're working with this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of their other guys last year were, like, popping off the page to me.
Virginia Tech in year 2 under Mike Young, still a bit of an unknown there. Clemson, Brownells in the hot seat.
They were athletic team.
Yeah,
we handled them, but they were a very athletic, guard-driven team. So I don't know who they have coming back, but I did like the way they played.
Miami, Georgia Tech, I mean,
Miami has that one score.
Boston College, bad.
Yeah, Boston College sucks.
Syracuse, I don't know. They're kind of they're Jim Boeheim. They're Syracuse. They're going to zone. They're going to shoot a lot of threes.
Syracuse got hot last
year. Buddy Boeheim.
They got hot last year to make a push, and yeah.
I don't know.
Cuse is up there.
Yeah. ACC should be interesting. I don't think it's super deep by any stretch of the imagination. I think the bottom is kind of the bottom. The Big Ten would definitely be deeper, but it's always an interesting league, and I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, the games we lost, Florida State being we last year, Pitt, the second game of the season, we got absolutely just caught off guard, and the refs were horrible. I think there were 18 penalties on Florida State and like 2 on Pitt. It was crazy. And the second game of the season,
Pitt. I didn't think, for some reason, Pitt always seems to beat Florida State.
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh.
In basketball, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in football, too.
Jeff Capel.
He's got it. Oh, yeah, I like him. Duke boy.
Yeah, he is. He's dropping bags up there in Pittsburgh, so we'll see if it pays off.
Pitt needs to be good at basketball. It actually bothers me that they're not.
Wake Forest new coach this year as well, Steve Forbes, over from East Tennessee State.
Does Georgia Tech still have that?
Josh Pastner, yes.
Yeah. Doesn't he just look like that slicked hair? Like, he definitely would. Oh, this is going to be over the line. I will edit myself before I say it. But let's just say I picture him in the church.
Okay.
And I don't –
Is he breaking glass on wedding day? Is that
No. I picture him in the church as like a youth pastor.
Okay, I gotcha.
I don't like
him. Pastner, the pastor.
Yeah, right. He's snaky to me. I don't like him.
Yeah, well,
he got in trouble.
They got in
for like strippers or something.
No. You're confusing that with Louisville. There was money stuff, but
yeah,
it was an assistant.
Hofers or something.
And then NC State, we should also mention they have a team. Kevin Keats is there. I don't know if they're going to be any good or not, but they're there, and that's that. Your ACC roundup.
This? You're a big basketball guy. I venture to say, I'll throw you on the spot here. Your favorite sports is college basketball number 2 behind college football?
I think so. Yeah, I think at this point it is.
You love college basketball. So let me ask you, give me a quick rundown of Xavier's tried and true Big Ten conference. I mean, Big East conference. And then, let me hear what you got to say about that first, and then I'll ask you about the overall landscape, because I want to hear a little preview.
Well, the Musketeers, year three under Travis Steele, trying to find their footing. I mean, if you remember Chris Mack's last year, one seed, Big East champs.
Of course I remember, Scott.
Then losing the second round of the tournament to Florida State. Oh,
that's right, Florida State.
Yeah. J.P. McCura committed two fouls and somehow fouled out. Don't understand how that happened still to
Salty.
This day. Yeah. Well, I guess it was a makeup for the time that Florida State was favored and Xavier ran him out of the gym 2 years prior to that. Yep. And blew out a much heavily favored Florida State team on the way to the Elite Eight that year. But this is sort of we're transitioning, right, into Steele. Steele was an assistant. He was the lead assistant, but like into his sort of version of what the team is going to look like now.
Well, got 3-4 stars this year.
Yeah, some big recruits. Duane Odom, one of the biggest ones. He's from just up the road in Georgia, a really talented wing. They really like Colby Jones on the wing as well. Some size coming in, some transfers as well that should factor in. But really this team will be defined by Paul Scruggs, who's a senior guard, as tough as they come, a true Big East type guard, if you will, who you give the ball to. And then Zach Fremantle, who's a sophomore big man. He played a lot of meaningful minutes as a freshman. He's athletic, big white kid, but he can do it all. And they're
so
looking
they
for him
fall
to take
the
leap.
Where do they fall in the Big East rankings?
Right now they're projected mid-pack, I think 7th preseason, actually.
Wow. Pretty low.
And
who's won? Villanova?
Villanova's expected to be the best. Creighton, probably right after them, would be widely considered to be the second-best team. And then you can plug in any combination of Providence and Seton Hall.
Seton Hall lost that score, though, correct?
Yeah, Miles Powell's gone.
Yeah, Miles Powell, yep.
But they do have a lot of good pieces back, including their big man, whose name I can't say.
How
Mamushka
whatever.
Yeah.
No, he is good. No, I know exactly what you're talking about because we watched that game, a game of theirs together, and I had it pulled up and we were working on it.
Yep,
could
yep.
not do it. So, Scott, are you proud of me for how dialed in I am on basketball?
I'm very proud. Yeah, you had no idea what you were.
You were
like, I'm not watching. I'll be honest, I'm not watching.
I was watching for a second.
Yeah, yeah, but nothing else.
Well, slate this week. I'm like, dude,
I have
nope.
No idea what's going on.
Over my head.
I'm excited for Xavier because I'm always excited for Xavier when the season starts.
This is the earliest I've been tuned in.
I'm just, you know what? I think it's just part of the whole stretch of like sports. Like, I'm just so happy that we may or may not have these things, right? Like, every time it kicks off, it's just like an extra. I think the beginning of a season is always special for any sport that I follow, but like, it has an extra kick to it this year. Like, the first week of college football had a kick to it. The NFL, same deal. Baseball, when it came in, same deal, you know. And now with college basketball, it'll have that same kind of feel to it. And I'm excited for it. Why don't we get into a few storylines that we're looking for this year? Because I don't know how dialed in everybody else is to college basketball before this thing tips off. So what is
a lot of people don't realize it starts this Friday.
Right.
Or this
Wednesday. Yeah, I mean,
Florida State's Friday.
Yeah, Florida State's Friday, but some of these tournaments and stuff start on Wednesday, and we'll have games. Again, like I said, if you guys want to watch Xavier, noon Wednesday, dial in. I mean, could be interesting. They're playing Oakland at home. I know that's exactly the matchup everybody was fired up to watch to start their college basketball season. But I'm excited that like literally one of the very first games played of the season is going to be X, and they're going to be on TV. So that's pretty cool to me. But you mentioned earlier North Carolina, and you've been kind of dialed in a little bit to them because, I mean, you said they're trash, but at the same time,
because I hate Roy Williams.
but they're an interesting group because they were terrible last year, and that's very uncharacteristic for a group that has won multiple national championships under Roy Williams. It's usually Duke and UNC and everybody else in the ACC, but North Carolina, even despite the fact they had one of the top recruits in the country, a guy that just went 15th overall to the Orlando Magic on Wednesday night, granted he was injured a lot of the time, but Cole Anthony, they just were not good last year, and they're trying to get back going. So what might have them trending back in the right direction this year?
Obviously, their talent that they that Roy Williams thinks they don't have. But the 3 5 stars that roll in, two big centers, I'm interested to see how that works. Two big centers, six, one of them 6'9", but one of them 7 foot and built, ready to roll. I want to see how that translates in a fast-paced guard-styled sport these days, you know?
True.
I mean,
yeah,
that's how it works. Do big guys even work anymore?
It's not a throw-the-ball-in-the-post type game anymore.
One team that succeeded with that last year was Kansas.
With Azubuike.
Yeah, from Jacksonville, Potter's House.
Potter's
right?
House Christian, yep.
Yep, so aside from him, no one else really had an elite big guy. So I want to see what they do. North Carolina is a brand name. I'm excited for that. Another storyline is, I'll be so honest with you, Luca Garza
with Iowa, yeah. National preseason player of the year.
And I mean, last year,
he could have won player of the year last year.
Last year, I heard his name only.
No.
Don't even know what he's good at. Never seen him play.
Score.
Yeah.
Well, just plain and simple. He's a scorer. Iowa, that's them in a nutshell. They're scorers. They don't play much defense. He's not much of a defender. The guy can fill it up in a variety of ways. He's fun to watch, and Iowa should be fun to watch this year.
Scored 44 against Michigan last year.
Yeah.
It's a lot for a college player.
Good God. That doesn't happen every day of the week to be able to drop 40. That's kind of a standout type move.
I keep hearing his name pop up, and whether it's a podcast or an article, I mean, you saw it. I just clicked the first article I saw on ESPN.
Yeah.
And it says, best player in college basketball, Luka Garza. Yeah. I'm like, okay. I guess I need to watch him.
So I'm excited.
Not just to see him play, but for myself, not to read stat lines, but watch him play. I've seen his name on the bottom line all last year as well, but I'm ready to watch him. And if I want to be locked in this early, I can tune in on some Big Ten basketball and see Luka Garza.
Speaking of Big Ten basketball, is this the year for the Big Ten? Iowa, we just mentioned Luka Garza. They have not won a national championship, let me remind you. They have not won a national championship since 2000 when Michigan State beat Florida. That's the last national championship in college basketball for the Big Ten. There has not been a national champion west of the Mississippi River since Kansas won in 2008. This feels like, I don't know, as good a year as any for the Big Ten. Very deep conference. Widely considered to be the deepest conference, should get anywhere from 8 to 12 teams in the NCAA tournament this year, and then they have three teams at the top that are widely well-respected.
Iowa, Wisconsin,
and Illinois. Yep.
Yeah.
And all three of those
Michigan
teams could...
Michigan State, Michigan, Rutgers, these are all teams that are ranked.
By the way, say that again. Rutgers is ranked preseason to start. Wow. Steve Piquel has done an incredible job in Piscataway. Rutgers basketball is no longer a joke.
Ohio State, 23.
Yeah, and this is a league that is very, very good. And it just we keep waiting. It's going to happen eventually, right? The Big Ten is too good of a league not to have a national champion at some point in time. And a lot of that has been, you know, bad luck, right? You run into the wrong team in the wrong year. They've had plenty of teams that have played for national championships. In fact, like, think of this. Since their last national championship, Illinois played and lost to North Carolina in 05. You've had Michigan State go back, and they lost to North Carolina in 2009. You've had Ohio State go. They lost to Florida in 06. You've had who else? There have been other teams from the Big Ten. Michigan has gone twice. They lost to Louisville.
Yep. They beat us in the Elite Eight.
And then lost to Villanova. You've had Wisconsin go. They lost to Duke. Yep. I mean, that's five teams.
Frank the Tank Kaminsky.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Sam Decker. Yeah, really good team that had beat the unbeaten Kentucky team in the Final Four that year. Yep. Like, they've had opportunities. They've had really good teams. They just can't quite seem to put it quite all together at the right time to get it done. I don't know. Maybe it's just going to take a little fresh blood. You know, Illinois hasn't obviously been this type of a power since the mid-2000s. We haven't seen Wisconsin put it all together under Greg Gard since Bo Ryan retired. Iowa with Fran McCaffrey, like, they've never really been a national title contender. Maybe it will take something like that for them, for the league to finally break through and win one, but it just... Every year, this will be a storyline every year, I guess, until they actually do it. But, man, it feels like this Big Ten, if there's a year, they've got enough teams that could potentially break through that you can name five or six teams that wouldn't shock you if they managed to put it all together and win a national title.
Yeah, they're definitely the deepest conference. You know, the ACC has some people at the top, but you already mentioned the guys at the bottom suck. And the Big Ten doesn't have that problem this year. You know, there's no other conference really like it.
I mean, Northwestern's terrible, but other than that.
Well, yeah. Purdue's scrappy. They're a pretty good program. I mean,
they've got a couple four-stars that are coming in. It should be a fun league to watch. You said you're looking forward to watching the Big Ten basketball. Should be a fun league to watch.
And we should mention Gonzaga is almost unanimously, almost, ranked number one.
Yeah, and that's a milestone in and of itself.
I think they had a five-star for the first time.
Mark Few has built – it's a great question that I've heard asked. Like, when Mark Few retires or, you know, whatever, at the end of his time at Gonzaga, like, is Gonzaga still going to be good? Like, are they a good coach or a good program type deal, you know? And what he has done is incredible. Gonzaga, even a couple of years ago, still was considered kind of a plucky upstart, a mid-major. No one would describe them as that now. You don't end up as a preseason number one if you're a plucky mid-major. No, you're a powerhouse at that point. Gonzaga is a basketball powerhouse, and it should be.
Well, they've been like that since Adam Morrison or something. They've been a great program for a long
time. Yeah, and they have been. But I think everyone respects
them. Not that they've broken through.
Right. But I think everyone respects them now. Like, I don't think anyone sits there and goes, Gonzaga, really? Like, even when they're a one seed. 8 years ago, I think people were still sitting there going, like, Gonzaga's a one seed. But ever since they went to the title game back in 2017, and they have continually been one of the best programs year in and year out, everyone has this mutual respect for Gonzaga now and what they are. Are you trying to find who the big recruit is they got?
I'm going to look up their big recruit here, but it's – oh, that's why.
In the wrong year?
No, I just had it filtered incorrectly.
Oh, gotcha.
Scotty Barnes, there he is. All right, give me one sec.
All right, so while you're looking up that player, I'm going to talk about...
There he is, got him.
You got him?
Point guard at
Minneapolis, Jalen Suggs.
Okay.
He is the 11th overall guy, according to Rivals.com, and he's a 6'4 point guard. But he is exactly who I was thinking of, and I believe he's their first five-star. Ever.
There you go. And think of what they've done without the five stars. Right. That's pretty incredible. They're no longer a mid-major, even though they play in a mid-major conference. Gonzaga is not. I do want to talk about the best mid-majors this year, and it's the Atlantic 10 Conference. Look for the A-10, and one name that you're going to recognize right at the top, the Dayton Flyers. Yeah. Obi Toppin is gone, gone to the New York Knicks, but... Jalen Crutcher is back. Several other players that impacted are on that team that was so good, maybe even a national title favorite going into last season, NCAA's tournament that obviously didn't happen. They're back. I mean, Anthony Grant still got a really good group there in the A-10. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with again, but they're not even the favorites in the A-10 this year. That belongs to St. Louis. Travis Ford I think it's his third or fourth year now. Yeah. He's built that thing, has had success in the A-10 before. He was at UMass about 15 years ago. He's got a veteran group, and they're expected to be one of the best, if not, they're expected to be the best team, I think, in the A-10, along with Richmond, who is another one of the most veteran teams in the country. Chris Mooney's been there a long time. They run the Princeton offense, kind of a unique setup there. But they're expected to be as good as ever. And then the A-10 is actually pretty deep. Kind of reminds me of when Xavier was in there when I was in college one year. I think it was like 2010. There was about six teams that were legitimately on the bubble for most of the year. From the A-10, you're like, you're not going to get six teams in the tournament. And they didn't get that many. Ended up getting three or four. But that's a lot for a mid-major conference.
Right.
And this is a league that Dayton, Richmond, and St. Louis all should be almost locks, I'd say, for the tournament. And then from there, they could get, you know, St. Bonaventure figures to be pretty darn good again this year. UMass is a trendy up-and-coming pick out of the A-10. VCU is always scrappy. Davidson always scrappy. I mean, there are some really good teams in that league. If you're looking for a mid-major league to watch this year, my recommendation, the A-10, keep an eye on them.
See, this is how I know Scott loves them some college basketball.
There's no notes.
No.
He's over off the top of his head, dropping some Richmond Spiders knowledge on us. Yeah. Coaches, players, you name it. He's like, yeah, yeah, I like college basketball. It's probably my second favorite. Just dropping that on us. Scott, it's good to have you back on your basketball. Yeah. And you know what? You make me better. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
From
all right.
The bottom of my college basketball heart.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
No.
All right, I got one more thing. Really short.
I'm shocked.
For a guy who's a friend of ours who definitely doesn't listen to the podcast, Andy Capobianco, his UConn Huskies back in the Big East where they rightfully belong this year.
That's right.
And they've got a guy by the name of James Bouknight. Remember that name because he's got a little Shabazz, little Kemba in him.
Okay.
Sophomore guard.
Shifty little tiny point guard.
Just a dynamic playmaker and showed signs of it as a true freshman last year for Coach Dan Hurley now in his third season. He's going to be the go-to guy. I don't know how good they're going to be this year in the Big East. I mean, it's hard to gauge an AAC team going to the Big East. It's a very different basketball league, obviously. Big East is pretty
good
top to bottom.
Them having the Big East emblem on their shirt.
It's right.
It makes sense. Yeah. They should have never been anywhere else.
Well, blame football because... That's what, yeah, again, blame football. Yep. Syracuse might as well fold football for the remainder of the year this year anyway and then just go back to the Big East for one season.
Does Florida State not play Syracuse?
In football?
Yeah.
I don't think so this
because
year.
Because they,
which is too bad.
We cannot have them fold.
Talk about
we
a team
need that,
that
win.
Talk about a team that is barely hanging on at this point in time, the Syracuse football team. But, yeah, I just wanted to wrap with that. It just feels right. Feels good. Old Big East sort of coming back. With UConn in there.
Damn it. How does Florida State not pull
not draw
Syracuse in football?
Year. Who's in our division normally. But
all right. Well, I'm mad about that.
This year. But, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's our college basketball primer. We're excited for it. College basketball fan from college basketball school, Florida State, over here, Alex, is fired up for it. Obviously, I thought that I was going to a college basketball school to make up for the fact that Florida State was never good at basketball, and then they immediately got good as soon as I left and went to a different school. But that's okay. I don't mind rooting for Florida State and following along with them, too, as long as they don't match up in the tournament. And we should have some...
I'm sick of matching up with Xavier, actually.
I don't want to do that anymore. Yeah.
We've done it twice.
Yeah, we're even, 1-1, and that's it.
That's enough.
That almost happened my freshman year.
We lost to Wisconsin.
Yeah,
correct?
Xavier was the four seed in that side of the bracket. Florida State was the five seed, so they were due to match up in the second round.
We lost to Wisconsin, Tony Douglas.
Yeah, and Florida State lost to Wisconsin in the first round. Xavier beat. What a bad matchup that was. They get Wisconsin. Florida State gets Wisconsin in a 5-12 matchup. Xavier gets Portland State in a 4-13 matchup and just cleans their clocks and then ends up blowing out Wisconsin in the second round. Got a little revenge for the Noles in that one, too. But that was the last time that I just remember I was at a party. I watched the end of that game. It ended in, I think, an OT. And I just, like, collapsed onto the floor. And my roommate was like, we should go now. You're laying on the ground
in this
house. They
had to carry you out like the drunk girl at the party.
Because that was a late game, if you remember. And brutal. Anyway, shall we get into, before our NFL talk, a little bonus trifecta? I won't bring up your record this past week. People can do the math on that if they want. Or make an inference on
how it went. I don't
even
want to talk about it. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it.
But you're going to do your Turco trifecta as normally planned later on this week. It'll go out on Twitter, @sportsbar_pod. Give us a follow if you want to see
big week for everyone this week. Here's the reason. And Scott, I'll let you lead it in. But the reason is, it's Thanksgiving, baby. We're doing a little turkey trot. The Turco trifecta, the turkey trifecta, the whatever you want to call it. Come up with a cool name.
Well, you're doing a bonus here because you're going to do your normal Turco trifecta at the end of the week. But we're going to do a turkey trifecta right now, exclusive for listeners of the pod.
It's perfect because there's three NFL games on Thursday.
Yeah, so people, if you don't listen, you're not getting this. So tell your friends they got to listen to the episode.
The old Thursday special.
Yeah, so three NFL games on Thursday as per tradition, at least in the last decade, because there used to only be two. And then the NFL Network was found and they're like, we need programming. And then, you know. That's how it went, and now it's on NBC. But we'll start things off with the first game of the day. We call this one the old, you're looking around for some snacks. You've cracked the first couple of drinks of the day. You're easing in.
You filled
in.
The coolers with ice. You helped your mom set the table. You kind of asked already what chores you can do to help, and really they just want you the hell out of the way.
And you're like, oh,
okay,
good.
No, absolutely.
I'll go turn the TV on.
Yeah, sure.
Boom, look at that. There's the lines.
The dog. The dog's walked. Everything's set. I don't know about you. We eat a little bit later in the day.
We eat about midday, so.
I usually wear two separate sets of clothes because in Florida it's hot as shit.
Yeah.
So I'll change into a little bit nicer shirt for the dinner, you know. Nice. So right now I'm in a nice khaki shorts, the old classic, but I'm leaning right into the Houston Texans
and the Detroit Lions
versus the Detroit Lions.
Ford Field, a Thanksgiving tradition. The line is 2.5. Texans are favored in this one. Where are you going?
Lay it. The number's not big enough. The Texans aren't good, but Deshaun Watson is on the Texans last time I checked. And the Detroit Lions suck. It's a tradition unlike any other, them sucking on Thanksgiving. And it will continue this year in their boring-ass uniforms, where it's just a silver helmet and a blue jersey. So there you go. Texans will win that one by more than 2.5 points. Go ahead and lay the number.
All right, so the next one, you may be eating at this point. This may be right before you're eating. This may be even finishing up after you're done eating. But it's, of course, the late afternoon tilt on Fox, and it is Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, and the Dallas Cowboys. And this is about as traditional a Thanksgiving matchup as you can get, which is kind of ironic this year because you lose the Native American imagery as part of it. But it's the football team of Washington against the Dallas Cowboys. That's the one you want to see usually on Thanksgiving. It just feels right to watch those two teams play. This year it kind of stinks because both of those teams kind of stink. Well, don't kind of stink. They both really stink.
I mean, to be unpolitically correct, there's something very traditional about Cowboys versus Indians, right?
True, yeah, right. No.
It should be the Redskins. Let's just pretend this Thursday it's the Redskins again.
Okay.
It'll make me feel
Maybe they'll wear like a spear in their helmet or something for old
they
time.
They should. Day. That was an awesome helmet.
They go throwback uniforms if it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You haven't even been this team for a year yet and already.
The football team throwing it back to the Redskins.
Right.
So this is a tough game, actually. And I'm going Cowboys. The line opened at 1.5. Thankfully, that's where I grabbed it. I'm going Cowboys in essentially a pick 'em. I just think they have enough weapons to get it done. The pass rush of the Washington
football team
actually has me a little bit worried as a betting man on this game. But I think the Cowboys, Andy Dalton, felt like he got into somewhat of his groove. Not that he's ever something special, but he's good enough to beat the Redskins. And I think the Cowboys defense coming out of a bye week had a nice game against the Minnesota Vikings. I'm expecting them to carry that over to an Alex Smith-led Washington football team.
All right, and then the nightcap. So you've had dessert, maybe a little coffee, maybe a little Drambuie to settle your stomach.
You might need some coffee to stay up for this one because it's going to be another fun traditional battle.
And that would be a slobber knocker in the AFC North. This is one of the better matchups we've had in this late window for Thanksgiving, and that is the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers against the all of a sudden, wallowing Baltimore Ravens.
I love hearing you say it because you didn't think the Steelers would be good this year.
No, yeah. I did not think they'd win more than 8 games, and they've already done that, and we're only a little over halfway through the season. So I obviously was way off on that one. They are still a team that is – I mean, at this point, I like them almost to go to the Super Bowl because they're such a charmed group. Like, Minka Fitzpatrick, nobody's in the right place at the right time more than that guy. He got another pick off a ball
off
that was deflected
on
Sunday against the Jaguars. It was just like, he's just like standing there, and then he's like, look what I found.
Hits him in the chest.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Now, granted, he does it
around the football.
And that's a good thing. I mean, he's putting himself in good situations. You make your own luck. But it is remarkable on how this team kind of functions in this way. But who do you like in this one? The line, Steelers favored by 4.5 at home against the Ravens.
As a guy that roots for the Steelers, it's crazy to think that out of this series before the year started, I said, we'll split it. Ravens will take it in Baltimore. Steelers will take it in Pittsburgh. Let's keep it simple. But the Steelers now winning that game when they did against the Ravens 3-4 weeks ago now.
Yep.
In Baltimore, when everything was on the line, And the Ravens really needed to prove that they were the top dog in the AFC North. And people were still questioning, are the 6-0 or 7-0, whatever we were at the time, Steelers for real? And the Steelers pulled that one out. I said, that was a gift. Because from here on out, the Steelers have an easy schedule. The best team left on their schedule is the Bills. Everyone else is average at best besides the Ravens one more time. So I think the Steelers come very focused for this one, ready to get, and it's not revenge, but ready to get a another jab in on the Ravens. I think they may win this game. Eventually, they're going to lose. So although my gut says I think the Steelers just play fired up and win this game because that's what they like to do against the Ravens, play fired up, I'm taking the Ravens with the points to play it safe. So give me the Ravens plus 4.5. I think it's a field goal game, whether the Steelers win or not. Not so sure on that, but Ravens plus 4.5.
All right, there you go. Your extra bonus, exclusive for listeners of the pod, turkey trifecta for Thanksgiving Day. Texans covering the 2.5 on the road in Detroit. Cowboys covering the 1.5 at home against the football team. And then the Ravens, 4.5-point underdogs, but Alex likes them to cover the spread on the road against the Steelers. There you go. Turkey trifecta. Why don't we go ahead and switch to a little more NFL talk here to wrap things up. Before we do that, I want to remind you that the Sports Bar Podcast always presented to you by Ice Mule Coolers. We're in the Ice Mule Cooler studio today. Alex and I back together.
And hey, this weekend I had a little gender reveal.
You bust out the Ice Mule Cooler.
Baby number two, of course I did. And I had a cooler out back, used the Ice Mule to kind of situate itself in between rooms, so I had something a little bit closer for convenience. Had ice sitting in there the next day with ice cold drinks. Black Friday's this Friday. Christmas is right around the corner.
Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you're buying gifts for.
Everything. Time to hop on there. Birthdays. I don't know.
A lot of people would December birthdays.
That's so, right. So time to hop on icemulecoolers.com.
Yes. And a special promo running right now. No promo code needed. 20% off at checkout. Again, no promo code needed. And you can get 20% off on your Ice Mule Cooler. So head on over. IceMuleCoolers.com. Check it out. Find that gift for whoever the special one is in your family. Or just treat yourself. Because, heck, it's 2020, 20%. Man. It's 2020. Yeah, we deserve things this year. You deserve a gift. So go ahead and buy yourself one, too. I'm a big guy for that. Black Friday, I like to buy for myself. You know, there's something like that. But
you've been single for too long. You're not single.
Exactly.
No, you've been single for too long.
Exactly. All right, so the NFL. I just got a few things that happened this weekend that I kind of went like, huh? What? That? Made me scratch my head a little bit. Confused me slightly at times. I want to hash them out with you. Let's start with this.
I always feel better talking stuff out with you. Have you noticed
This is good. Yeah, this is why we have each other.
It's
so that
what
we
did with Florida State a couple weeks ago, and I was really upset about where we were as a program. Then we talked it out, felt a little better.
Well, maybe Dolphins fans are talking it out this week. Tua Tagovailoa, the savior. He's the guy that's inserted into the starting lineup a few weeks back because he gives them a best chance to win. Well, what happens on Sunday? They lose to the Broncos, and Tagovailoa gets benched because Ryan Fitzpatrick, direct quote from Brian Flores, gave them the best chance to win. Wait, I think I've heard that before. Tua benched? Why? Is this a cause for concern? Like, what did you think about that?
Part of me likes the fact that Brian Flores is just like, hey, man, you're playing like ass. We need to get someone in there that's going to help us win. And I like that. But when you have a franchise quarterback, a young one at that, a rookie at that, and you're trying to make a playoff push, it surprised me. It felt desperate. It looked like a desperation move, like, hey, we're trying to make this push to the playoffs, and you're not our guy? Why was he put in there in the first place? Because Fitzpatrick was playing well before he got benched. I'd be a little bit concerned, but it was a road game. It was in Mile High. Denver, for whatever reason, likes to be scrappy. Their offense isn't very good.
Every time everybody doubts them, they find a way to win a game that nobody thought they would win.
They're one of those teams that would be better off tanking because they have a couple pieces. They're a scrappy bunch, but they need just enough help to where it'd be nice to be in the front end of the draft.
No doubt.
They keep trying to do some sneaky stuff. I'd be a little bit concerned. I mean, where's this fall? You didn't ask me. Do I have to like give it a rating?
No, no. I just wanted to workshop it with you because I was just confused.
Fan, I'd say, you know, what are we doing here? This is our guy. Right.
Like, is this going to happen again? Like, is this something
you can't have a short
in a couple
leash
weeks,
with that guy?
Right? Is there in a couple weeks they're struggling against the Chiefs, and he throws Fitzpatrick in there late in the third quarter again to try and rally or something? Like, all of a sudden you got to start. I hope if you're a Dolphins fan, I wouldn't want to see that happen again this year. Like, I just don't want Tua to start looking over his shoulder, you know, right? Because that's not going to help a team try and rally and make the playoffs this year.
Let me ask you then, do you go back to Tua next week?
Well, they already said he's the unquestioned starter. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's his job.
Okay.
But he just didn't give him the best chance to win on Sunday.
At that moment, yeah.
Which is, I mean, we've all thought that before at certain points in time with our teams that we're rooting for at whatever point, but rarely, if ever, do you see a coach actually act on that. That's what's so wild. All right, next up. Everyone assumed when Drew Brees went out with the injury that it was Jameis time in New Orleans, right? That's why they brought him in. He was taking over for Teddy Bridgewater as the top backup for the Saints because of the fact that Brees is a little older. He'd had a little bit of a injury history, and they wanted to have a proven backup behind him. Not so fast. Taysom Hill surprisingly gets the start. And in a bit of a roller coaster outing, leads the Saints to a pretty resounding win over the Atlanta Falcons. Like, is this actually the guy? Can, like, he do this against good teams, do you think? Or was that just because they were playing the Falcons?
I couldn't believe that he did it. And he rushed for 2 touchdowns, 60 yards. He's still that dual threat guy. That's what he does. It's probably smart to have a good backup behind him. Because like you said last week, or maybe we were just at the bar talking about this. It was at the bar. It was not on the recording. But you said it's crazy that in college, all he did is stay injured.
Yeah.
And now he runs like a battering ram in the NFL with bigger, stronger, faster guys. And he has no problem whatsoever. Not a nick, not a bruise, not a scratch. He's beating guys' ass left and right. I would say it's a very small sample size for me to sit here and think that he can do it on a high level constantly. But he looked good. He really did. I mean, every time it flipped over on red zone, he was making throws. He was dropping back. It was nice seeing him in the pocket because you never get to see that otherwise. Because, of course, when he comes in, it's typically a trick play. So seeing him in the pocket was impressive, and I thought he did a good job. He left a lot of air on some of his deep balls I saw. One of them, Emmanuel Sanders, came back and basically
caught
a punt. Yeah, exactly. So, I need to see a little bit more, but I was impressed.
I'm curious to see, again, what it looks like in a second week. I mean, I'm sure he had some jitters, some nerves. I mean, it's his first NFL start at true quarterback, right? But I still feel as of today, right now, I mean, I sat here a couple weeks ago when we did this show, and I picked the New Orleans Saints as my team to go to the Super Bowl from the NFC again. And right now, I wouldn't do that because of the fact that I don't believe that Taysom Hill, in his current iteration, can lead a team to a Super Bowl win. Now, if Drew Brees comes back and is healthy enough and they can start doing that mix and match deal again, then I'd feel better. But I don't know. I'm curious to watch it and see if Hill takes a step in the next start or if this ends up being this sort of like weird trick that may or backfire in the face of Sean Payton eventually. We talked about the Dallas Cowboys a few minutes ago as part of the turkey trifecta. You mentioned how they're coming off a nice win against Minnesota. Well, part of that win could be attributed to the fact that Mike McCarthy brought watermelons and a sledgehammer into the locker room and was blasting them last week before the game.
God, I did not see
Gallagher that. Style, yes. And he said they needed an extra bit of something to motivate them, and apparently him doing a Gallagher impression was what the Cowboys need. Like, what's the encore here for Mike McCarthy this week? What do you do?
You could pull an old Jack Del Rio, keep chopping.
Oh, no. We don't need
with the axe
Jalen Smith chopping his leg off on accident.
Yeah, and he would, given his
injury history.
His luck. Yeah, I did not know that. I don't know how you top that. At this point, he's going to have to bring in like a little
Picturing like a magic trick where he like steps into the box and disappears somehow. Or
his big ass is not disappearing.
Maybe he gets sawed in half.
He's not going anywhere.
I mean, he set the bar really high here with these, like, I don't know, weird shows. I don't know. He's it's bizarre to me. The whole Mike McCarthy experiment in Dallas has been bizarre in the fact that the guy has seemed like a statue on the sideline all season, and now he's smashing watermelons in the locker room.
He's no emotion. None. I can't picture him coaching
anyone. And the mask like doesn't help him in the fact that it masks his emotion even more. Bizarre stuff. I don't know what he follows it up with, but I just had to bring that up because that was the strangest thing I saw.
Well, hopefully he does something if he truly thinks his antics are the motivating factor.
Maybe he
to
bursts
wins.
Out of a turkey or something before the game.
That'd be a huge turkey. Or he just
maybe
comes
he dresses
in
up
suit.
As a turkey.
Yeah. If he comes in as a turkey suit, who wouldn't be
game
fired?
Over. Yeah. Game over. Pound the Cowboys to cover.
I said it. 1.5. Lay it.
Joe Burrow. Bad news. Hate to see it. Goes down with a knee injury on Sunday. ACL, MCL, other structural damage. A lot of people are sitting there questioning the way that Zach Taylor and the coaching staff was using him in this game. Running him a lot. He's been in harm's way all season long with that offensive line. And they're like, basically Bengals fans all season long have been like, we got to do a better job of protecting our investment. And, well, they obviously didn't do that because of the fact that the investment got injured.
Yeah.
Do you blame anybody for this, or is this just football?
I don't. It's just football. You don't draft a guy to say, oh, he's getting hit too hard too often. Let's go ahead and let him sit. That's not how it works. Now, the O-line is piss poor, and do they need to fix it? No doubt. Could they maybe do a couple three-step drops? He does hang in the pocket for a long time.
Well, he's a playmaker, and he wants to make plays.
And he has a lot of receivers, and they throw the ball downfield. I mean, you have to allow time for that. I think it's just a part of the game. I'm sorry it happened. I hate that it happened. I like me some Joe Burrow, but it's just a part of the game. What's a coach to do? Say, hey, you know what? The season's lost. We'll go ahead and bench you and not give you this valuable experience.
Right.
It's silly.
Right. I agree with you. I mean,
by the way, it's also sour grapes because it's not like Zach Taylor said, oh, I'm going to, hey, you got to, you know, tough it out, rookie. He didn't say that. He didn't want him to get hurt. His job's on the line.
It's Bengals fans just being like, we're cursed, you know, and it's like another opportunity for them to be like, we're cursed, and I hate the Bengals and all this other stuff.
Yeah, so do I.
I was saying Bengals fans say that.
Yeah, I know. I do too, though.
All right, lastly here.
Except for Auden Tate. Play Auden Tate. Good God.
The weird, curious, Benjamin Button-esque, bizarre career of Carson Wentz continues. Another bad outing on Sunday, including an awful pick six, in which I just really doubt the guy has like an internal clock of any
kind. He floated a screen pass off his back foot.
Well, and he got crushed on another one when he somehow didn't feel the rush coming off the end, and he sat in the pocket for forever. Doug Peterson has come out and said, we're not benching him. That would be the opposite of what we need to do. But what do you do if you're the Eagles at this point? I mean, I it makes no sense anymore. I can't make it heads nor tails of what's wrong with the Eagles.
The Eagles have a lot of problems, actually, and one of them is they don't have weapons. They have some tight ends, but they don't have weapons. Miles Sanders, he's a good running back. They fell behind. They never gave him the ball again. And I'm not saying he's a great running back, but the fact that Carson Wentz has been struggling all year and you're just going to let him rip it all day, I have questions about Doug Peterson there. Carson Wentz, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to say it's done. And he needs a fresh start. Not done as far as his NFL career, but he might need to go to the Steelers and be a backup for another year or the, you know, somewhere where he can sit behind a veteran and take a deep breath and come in and spot mop-up duty. God, that mental side of the game, I can't get over how bad it is right now. He looks like terrible. Me and our buddy Joseph were sitting on this couch. And he was pausing the game. If I'd get up to grab a beer, he'd pause it and be like, look what Wentz just did. Look what Wentz just did. Incomplete passes. He was throwing into one play specifically. He threw a pass deep to Jalen Reagor, I think. Five Browns. Three on the ball. Two on the guy. One going for the ball. And then two more in the area. Literally, I don't even know what's five. Like quad cinco coverage? How do you say it?
Quadruple coverage?
No, quadruple.
That's
would be four.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know. I've never had to ever say it.
Centuple coverage or something?
Well, Cinco guys were there.
Yeah.
Okay. All Cinco were right there. And he threw it anyway. It was like, what are you doing? What are you seeing? I don't think he's seeing the game at all.
I think he's pressing so hard. Like you just mentioned it, they don't have a ton of weapons. They don't seem to have a ton of talent. So he's like, well, I got to go win the game. And he's like, he's always sort of had the blessing and the curse of being like, I'm a playmaker. Like he's always like, let me extend the play and try and get a huge play out of it. He's never one to take what the defense gives him that much. And I also saw somebody bring up the other day, really the Eagles haven't been the same since Frank Reich left. And may have been the key to that offense and really getting the most out of it. But you, at this point, if you were going to move on from one, you'd move on from Wentz over Peterson. That's a tough one, isn't it?
It's really a tough one. It's hard to put a new coach in with an existing quarterback.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? Like, Wentz has been there. He's kind of been doing the same thing for a little bit. I think a total change of scenery for his sake would be more beneficial to Wentz. But, yeah, I'd probably move on from Wentz before I'd move on from Peterson. Peterson's an aggressive guy. If they could get that team right roster-wise, I think he's still a good coach.
They're an enigma, the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know.
It's
tough. Both of those guys, they don't win the Super Bowl without either of them. I mean, Peterson, obviously the head coach, and the way he coached that team and called that team.
Wentz was going to be an MVP.
And then Wentz got him to the, you know, to he got him to the red zone, and then Foles punched it in, you know, basically at that point. That's not taking anything away from what Foles did in the playoffs, but Wentz got him to that point to where they could even do that.
Yep.
And that shouldn't be discounted, but it's just, I haven't seen much like that, and just the weird de-evolution of a franchise, the way that Philadelphia has gone from winning a Super Bowl just a few years ago to now just more questions than answers when it comes to the Eagles. All right. Well, that's our head scratchers from the week. And I think that does it for this show.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad we were back together. You know, a little turkey trifecta. I'm going to load up on. Okay, so how about this? Let's end with a little Thanksgiving fun. What's your favorite side? Favorite Thanksgiving side? Is it the stuffing?
Nope.
Is it the mashed potatoes? You get those?
Like those, but it's not my favorite.
You can get those whenever. Are you a mac and cheese on Thanksgiving guy?
I will eat a little bit, but it's not my first choice.
Okay. I'm always – you make the mac and cheese in a casserole as opposed to, you know, just the Velveeta.
Yeah. You got to do baked mac and cheese.
Right, baked mac and cheese. Yeah. It's classy.
Yeah. Classy. I would go with probably sweet potato casserole.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I would.
Sweet potato casserole?
Yeah.
With the marshmallows toasted on top?
Yeah. I mean, I try to avoid the marshmallows for obvious reasons, too much of them. But I like the sweet potatoes.
Because you got the sugar.
Yeah. You got the sugar.
Man, I'll tell you, that was probably going to be the last one I ever expected you to say.
Really?
I don't even put those on my plate.
Oh, man, I love it.
Because I'm just like, I got to save up for all the other stuff.
Oh, yeah, I would. So that's like your least favorite?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, mine is stuffing.
Now I like it. I'm not saying I don't like it, but.
Stuffing is the most overrated of all.
Oh, wow.
It's just.
Scott, we're different guys.
It's f***ing bread, man.
You caught me off guard with that. It is
just bread.
Stale bread. With butter and thyme and
celery. Yeah, I know it's got stuff to it. But
does anyone put sausage in?
Now, okay. That's a little different story there. I had, technically, I was educated on this. You know, stuffing actually goes in the turkey. Dressing is made outside of the turkey. I had andouille sausage.
Wait, whoa. Okay, so technically I eat dressing.
Yeah, because it's not actually coming out of the bird or whatever. But anyway, same concept.
I'm with you.
But yeah, I had it with sausage in it last weekend, and it was tremendous. That changes the whole game.
Game changer.
I will eat that. That is phenomenal. Okay. Right. Regular stuffing? No, I don't.
Yeah.
I spend my carbs on more important things.
Okay, I'm with you. So the past four, 2016. And I only remember that because that's when I lived in, whatever. Ashley lived in the apartment, and I made it over there and brought it over to my mom's. So I've been making the stuffing for 4 years now, and I make it with sausage.
Okay, yeah. Game changer. Obviously.
God, it's awesome. I mix the hot with the regular, so it's not like spicy, but it has some flavor. It's probably my favorite thing. It's so Thanksgiving to me.
Yeah. It's the regular stuffing or dressing or whatever, where it's just like Stovetop or whatever, you know, the brand.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff, it does nothing for me.
Yeah, it's just there.
So does nothing for me.
Okay. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I learned something about you.
Yeah. Love me some sweet potato casserole. I mean, I like the veggies and stuff too, but that was a less fun choice.
I'm glad you didn't
dessert?
Drop that on me.
You have a go-to dessert? Pumpkin pie, pecan pie?
My mom makes a pumpkin cheesecake.
Ooh.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, that
I'm not
good.
A huge like pumpkin pie guy, but it's a pumpkin cheesecake, and it's amazing. So, yeah, that would be mine for sure.
I like a good pecan pie.
Yeah.
I get my hands on it. But, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for Thanksgiving. I'm excited for football on Thursday. Excited for what a big week this is.
My favorite holiday.
It's a good holiday. And we've got basketball starting on Wednesday. We've got Thanksgiving and football on Thursday, leading into a big basketball and football-filled weekend this weekend. And then, heck, I know, judging by your house, we're already in it, but the Christmas season is upon us starting next week anyway.
Yes.
And we'll be looking forward to getting back with you all post-Thanksgiving on this pod again. We'll be talking about the college football playoff, NFL, and much, much more. But this has been another fun-filled edition of the Sports Bar Podcast. For Alex, I'm Scott. We'll talk to you next week on the Sports Bar Podcast.
Happy Thanksgiving.